From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 217 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are going to review a film called No Holds Barred. As always, I'm your host, Nick, and joining me in the top left corner from, I think, Akron, Ohio, wearing the plaid shirt and the glasses.
Diva.
And in the bottom right corner of my Zoom screen, also from Akron, Ohio, wearing a plaid shirt but no glasses.
Sir.
And in the bottom left corner of my screen, wearing glasses but no plaid shirt.
Zeus.
And Kyle.
So, today we're going to be talking about the 1989 film No Holds Barred. It is a Hulk Hogan vehicle. For a while, it was very difficult to find, and now is widely available, at least in the United States, on both Hulu and Amazon Prime Video. And this was placed into our jar, which we have a bunch of movie titles in that we have picked out by Eva. So, Eva, as always, we start all of these reviews with you answering the question. We only threw in a handful of movies each. Why, of all the movies in the world, did you pick No Holds Barred to put in the jar?
Because somebody here borrowed my DVD of No Holds Barred over a year ago and never watched it.
So, well, first of all, let's not say anything we can't take back.
Whoever that may be. So, as to why I own No Holds Barred, No Holds Barred was the first movie I saw in a movie theater as a kid. And I had these very dim memories of it because obviously it was never on television. I'd never heard anybody else even talking about seeing it. And for a long time, it might have been really, I'm sure it was released on VHS at least once, but it was not easy to find. And I had these like scraps of scenes in my head, and I couldn't remember like how they fit together, like what actually happened. And then like 4 or 5 years ago, I saw that it was released on DVD and I bought it and I watched it and I realized I had remembered it exactly correctly. There wasn't something in between that made all of those things make sense. I wasn't dreaming how strange it was or how disjointed it is at times. I was completely right. And so No Holds Barred is an example of how I need to not discredit my own memory and my own recollection of things, because often I am exactly right.
It is available on VHS on eBay. I found a few copies of it. They are not expensive.
Well, that's good.
So, Kyle, did you rewatch this?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so you've seen it a couple times. Tell me about your two experiences watching it, because I think the first time you watched it with a few friends, and this time, did you watch it alone? Or
So I watched it over the summer with a few friends, and we were all like vacationing together, and the weather was crappy, so we kind of stayed in at night and got a little drunk and watched this, and it was hilarious. We laughed the entire time. We're not even necessarily big wrestling fans. We're kind of just big cheesy movie fans for the most part, kind of like The Room or something like that. We were quoting Dookie for the whole entire week. Dookie! It was great. And then I rewatched it the other day and pretty much sober, and it was pretty horrible. I mean, it's
were you not alone too, or did you watch it with
Lisa? Yeah. So I watched it alone because Lisa had already watched it, and I told her I was rewatching it, and she's like, "No, I'm good." but I was trying to notice things about it, smart things that I could talk about it, and it was
tough. It's going to be a tough thing to do like a breakdown of.
The only thing I wrote down a couple quotes, and the only relatively smart thing that I can say about this movie is I kind of feel like it's making fun of the wrestling, like the wrestling as a whole. Like,
oh, you want that to be true, but
you don't think it is? Like, because I feel like the biggest fans of wrestling in the movie were at that bar, and they were clearly like showing how horrible that entire like room was. I don't know. they spent a very long time in that bar where really horrible, gross things were happening.
Oh, I think it shows what they think of the fans, definitely.
Yeah.
But as for what they think about, like, Hulk Hogan and their wrestling product, no, that's 100% serious.
Yeah, I think that that era of wrestling, I mean, wrestling in general, professional wrestling is coming, it comes out of the carnival culture, and I think the wrestling promoters see themselves as almost like they're conning the fans, to be honest. Like, they, it, you know, Vince McMahon, trust me, has no respect for the people who buy his product.
Well, it's interesting that this movie has an anti-establishment bent where, like, the Brell character represents, like, corporatism, and, like, he's an empty 80s, like, end of the 80s type suit who could have been like the guy from Wall Street in a different world. And it seems to be really against, or it is really against that guy, and it's showing how evil some of these people or that type of person can be in a, like, cartoonishly exaggerated way. But it's so funny that Hulk Hogan's the same. Vince McMahon is the same, if not more so. Like, especially given current events.
Yeah, somehow he's managed to surpass that cartoonish 80s villain. He actually is worse than
right. So it has this idea in its head, but it's so hypocritical about it.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to just do, like, a scene by scene breakdown? Because I have, like, plot beats written out. We could.
I don't know. maybe the plot beat. I mean, what?
Yeah, so it starts off.
Should we do all first impressions? First impressions first. I thought it was the one good thing I can say about it is that I like that they just completely leaned into them, the wrestlers having super strength. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't really quite expecting that. I'd heard about the movie, especially when, like, you know, MMA and, like, fighting movies were. There were people were looking for movies that had MMA history in them, and No Holds Barred would come up a lot. Yet I never watched it until just the other day, and man, it's bad. It's so bad.
So this was the first time you'd seen it?
Yeah. Okay.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Being a big wrestler fan, though. Well, an MMA fan.
No. Well, yeah, MMA for sure. Yeah, this is, I will say that, like, even the name, I think they called the first event the Battle of the Tough Guys.
Yeah.
No Holds Barred in the early days was not dissimilar to that.
MMA wasn't.
Yeah. Back then it was called NHB, No Holds Barred. And like the early UFC was pretty gross. Yet somehow this movie managed to be its own thing and not really portray that world. And yet it's just bananas. I don't have too many good things to say about it.
To go off of the
Zeus is like one of the most racist 80s black villains ever. He doesn't really even, like, he barely says any real words.
He's like, yeah.
So he just grunts.
Yeah. He grunts a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that. I wasn't, well, to go off of the No Holds Barred thing, I was going to ask Eva, what does No Quarter Given mean?
No quarters, no mercy, right?
Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure because near the end, when they're leading up to the final fight, they say this match is no holds barred, no quarter given, whatever, fight to the death, but something like that. But I've heard of no holds barred, but I wasn't sure about no. I think
I don't know if there's a direct
no quarter given. What that means.
Yeah, exactly. Like no holds barred literally means that any hold you would do in that match would be okay. That there are no holds that are against the rules.
Because no quarter given, wrestling matches aren't broken up into, I guess it'd be
not like that.
It just made me think of rounds or something.
Well, that's like, yeah, no quarter given, I think, is more, they kind of got their terms mixed up. No quarter given, I think, is from an older medieval jousting system.
I thought it was the
thing. I thought, or like sword fighting, basically. Though
I thought it was from, like, I remember during the Revolutionary War, quarter was when, like, you know, colonial Americans were required to house British soldiers in their homes, and I took it as like an act of mercy during a battle is to allow someone quarter in your home.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like a No Mercy. Wasn't that a WWE thing? No Mercy?
Was that the name of one of the video games?
Yeah, yeah. So I was going to say, it sounds like a video, like I think I've heard it in a video game title.
Yeah, they kind of blended terms there.
But yeah, I saw that Tiny Lister got like death threats from this role. Mostly probably because he beat on Hulk Hogan so hard. And
yeah,
not that he potentially killed a lot of innocent people, but he probably more because of the Hulk Hogan stuff.
I'm going to go out on a limb. Say that's not the only reason.
Oh, yeah. But but it was specifically because of this role, not just because of him being a person. But yeah. And I like the fact that Hulk Hogan straight up murders him at the end. And it's completely yeah. okay.
So yeah, we are to believe that he dies, right? Like just jumping to the very end of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, probably.
I assumed.
And there's no sequel to this, right?
No.
Should have been. I don't know. There should have been.
Yeah. Is there a spiritual sequel? That's the real question.
Do you guys know who... what movie what's the guy's name who plays Zeus?
Tiny Lester.
Do you know yeah. what his more like famous movie is that he's been in the last little over 10 years ago, but something that like is yeah. very popular?
Well, a couple.
The one
yeah, wait, a little over 10 years yeah. ago.
You know what I'm talking about.
The Dark Knight was 2008.
Yeah, he's I'm thinking of the Dark Knight. He's the guy who yeah. steals the walkie-talkie.
Yeah.
On the boat.
No, it's mm-hmm. he's basically Zeus. I think he might be Zeus. Is that what you're guessing, Nick? Or
no, I just when I saw him, it was one of those things like he's got a familiar face, but I didn't watch wrestling, so I don't really know where I would know his face. And I looked him up. I was like, oh, he's the walkie-talkie guy in the boat.
Well, yeah. I'm a little concerned because how many people here have seen Friday?
I've seen Friday? The day Friday. I've seen the music
video. I've seen My Girl Friday.
So you haven't seen Tiny Lister's main role, what he's really known for. Yeah, it's Friday. Oh. Yeah, Ice Cube.
I've seen the music video Friday about the Rebecca Black song.
In Posse, he punches a horse. And kind of it's almost kind of a send-up to that scene in Blazing Saddles where the horse gets punched.
So he wasn't. Was he an actual wrestler or a football player or like
he was? He became Zeus, the character on WWF to promote the film.
But besides mm-hmm. that, he hasn't done any real fighting or any sport outside of that. Mm-hmm. He's always just been an actor who portrays strong. People?
Yeah, he's not any kind of
he's not like the Rock or anything out, where he transitioned.
No, he tried out for football, I guess. He was kind of like a college track star. Hmm. It was like shot put. And then he kind of went right into movies. His first movie was Runaway Train. He was in Beverly Hills Cop 2. He's in Extreme Prejudice, a Walter Hill film.
So we're only doing a little bit of talking so far about the star of the show.
Kurt Fuller.
So the movie yeah. opens up with...
Shoot up that scene.
Rip. Rip, played by one Hulk Hogan, fighting against a man named Jake Bullitt in the ring. And Jake Bullitt gets a sleeper hold on him. You think, oh, Rip is going down. But no. Rip's got him. One thing I had a question for you guys who would probably know better than me during that fight. Are you allowed to punch in wrestling? You can just like punch people in the face.
I mean,
well,
I don't know the rules yeah. to wrestling. It's not just like you grab arms. You
can pretend to do it.
Well,
you can only pretend.
I mean, I don't want to like ruin wrestling for you, Nick, but, wrestling.
Careful, Kyle.
Wrestling isn't real.
Which in this movie they never.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. They make it very real, and that's yeah. what is kind of interesting about it. At least, I don't know. It Because the fact that it's made by what the WWE Network, whatever they call their production company, but it's not the showy like style of it. It's like the backyard wrestling version, which is definitely real, but I don't know.
It's strange because they seem to definitely be commenting on the kind of rise of MMA and No Holds Barred, because it was right around the time that movie came out, yet they're not really saying anything
deep
accurate about anything. You know, it's really weird. It's really weird. I mean, all I can say, the similarities, like I mentioned earlier, were just that it was all like just regular working class people. It wasn't a sport at the time yet. It also wasn't fights to the death with weapons allowed. Like, that never happened. And it is this weird like thing where they're trying to contrast the two of them like they're real sports. I mean, as soon as Hulk Hogan jumped through the roof of a car, like out of a car, through the roof, and then even past that, probably about 8 feet.
Oh, we're gonna get to that. So after this first match is kind of when the plot sets in, because Brell, who is played by an actor whose name I looked up and don't remember, but you would know him as one of the lackeys from Wayne's World.
Kurt Fuller.
Yes. He's mad at the jockass, which is what he calls Hulk Hogan, which is a hilarious insult. And every time,
have you ever heard that before?
Every time he said it, I laughed. The first time he's
that is not a slur.
The first time
that's not
a term. The first time he said it, I rewound it because I was like, did this dude really just say jockass? That's incredible. But he says, whenever this guy's on, like, we get our asses beat, so I want him working for our network. I have a couple quotes written down. A woman who's in the room, who he does not like because Brella is not a good person, tells her, he says, Miss Tidings, take a leak. And then someone else, when he says that he wants Rip to join their network, which I think would go against some contractual obligations, some random suit in the room says, I'm told that Rip's word is his bond. Which it tells us what we need to know about Rip, I think.
Well, okay, so question. We all know that's Hulk Hogan. It's not even like how Dwayne Johnson has tried to separate himself from his wrestling character. That's Hulk Hogan. Why were we trying to pretend that the person who portrays Hulk Hogan was going to try to act like some other wrestling character?
They could have just called him Hulk Hogan. It would have made a lot more sense. My guess is it did never occur to them.
I wondered if there were like, I mean, considering how much merchandise Hulk Hogan had out, and you know,
yeah, maybe it went against.
There was
it.
A contractual,
yeah.
Issue,
I
mean, but it didn't have it, like, the Hulk Hogan's like Hulk persona.
Maybe
you know if there's any. Maybe there's Rip merchandise now.
Well, maybe that's why they hate the Brell character so much, because they had to deal with people just like him.
Yeah, the fact that the main conflict of this movie is like network ratings, it makes it really kind of dull and weird, but
they have business meetings with him in his wrestling character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like the movie Network, the stakes will go up. So Brell insists that Rip and he meet. He tries to buy him off. He writes him not just the check, a blank check.
Which, if this guy's writing blank checks, why does he need ratings? Like, why does he care about that if he's able to write a blank check?
I don't know, but he ended up having to eat it.
Or it was fed to him.
That takes us to the first poop joke of the movie.
I don't remember the poop joke at that moment.
When he stuffs the check into his mouth and he says, I won't be around when that check clears.
Got him.
That Rip's got a quick wit. It's quicker than his left hook.
Man, I love the power of the blank check in the 80s and 90s consciousness of the youth. You know, it's like a blank check just meant that you could be an instant millionaire.
So literally a millionaire in the movie Blank Check.
That $1 million goes a long way in that movie.
Yeah. So one like major failing in this movie, I think, and I've noted this, like the thing that comes to mind whenever this type of situation comes up is Popstar, which is a movie I like. But the problem with that is the best songs come at the beginning, and what's supposed to be like their best song at the end pales in comparison to the rest. Or like A Star Is Born had a similar thing where the good song happens a half hour in and the rest is just like some dumb shit. And this, what I think is by far the best scene of the movie, comes like 15 minutes in, which is when Rip gets locked into a limo. He destroys the limo from the inside. He breaks through, fights a bunch of mooks in the parking garage, and then, of course, inadvertently causes someone to
dookie themselves,
to poop their pants.
Between kicking yourself out of a car door and jumping through the roof, I feel like one is way easier than the other, and yet he is able to do the other one way more easily.
Yeah,
him like kicking the car so hard that it swerves off the road is pretty awesome.
But then
at the very end of that whole scene, he rips a door off its hinges without even trying. Right.
And it doesn't even jerk off. Yeah, just lift it off
the hinges. Amount of power on display is a little uneven sometimes, but
it's yeah, pretty cool. I thought just the way that scene ends, like they just cut away. You don't know if
what did he do with the guy who pooped himself?
I feel like that guy got his own form of a beating. Like that was worse than any pummeling. Is the knowledge that he was made to poop his pants?
Absolutely. You know, Mussolini in his early fascist reign used to punish dissenters with castor oil. He would have his black shirts dump a bottle of castor oil in their gullets, and they'd have to they were public humiliation type thing.
There was a book I read called The Anatomy of Disgust, and it was talking about the sort, like, you know, our sources of disgust and how it's tied to shame. And there was a account in there of, I believe they were Vikings, and Vikings had very specific rules about not toileting indoors. They always went outside and had latrines dug like far away from their houses. And this battle that they were in, their enemies basically surrounded the building that they were holed up in and wouldn't let them leave, and forced them to, you know, defecate indoors, and the shame of that caused them to surrender.
And that's how the toilet was invented. So yeah, I think this is by far the most best is maybe not the right word, but the scene in which I was most emotionally involved. So following this, he meets with like it's a PR person, I guess, named Samantha. And he stumbles into a date with Sam, and she takes him to a French restaurant in which the waiter there is very condescending and alludes to not having hamburger l'Americas or footlong hot dogs. But it turns out this Rip, that we think we know everything about Rip. Guess what? Rip's full of surprises. He speaks French. He orders the usual. I don't know.
That scene is so bad.
Were you guys surprised at all by how that scene ended, or was that going the exact way you knew it was going to go?
It was going the exact way I assumed.
Yeah, down to I know he's going to speak French.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in his entire, he had like a white suit on. Oh,
God, this like bad suit is so bad.
I'm glad he was wearing pants at least. Oh, he could have been sporting that white suit with like shorts or something. His outfits throughout this entire movie were incredibly tight.
Yep. Yeah, they were weird because there was a blend of like them being different from each other, yet there weren't that many of them. Did you notice like he had the one outfit that was just different colors. One of them was violet and black, and then the other one I think was like white and black.
There was a red and black.
And he wore the, like, it was kind of like purplish red, like kind of a violet or something like that. And he like wears that multiple times. And then the one that's black and white, he only wears once.
And then there's an aqua one. Like an aqua one.
Yeah.
But everything is super short.
The colors that he wears are great. They're almost like out of a Wes Anderson's color palette. Like, yeah. If they were just slightly more muted, but he's got some good ones. So meanwhile, Brell and his boys show up to a bar where we're pummeled with our first homophobic joke in the movie. So that was fun. The female bartender tells them, "I'd like to get laid, relayed, and parlayed." I know what the first one of those things means. I know what a parlay is when you're talking about betting.
Yeah.
What is getting relayed and parlayed mean? Is relayed like she's the baton and she's being passed? But then what's a parlay? Like, it's she's part of a bet? Or she needs to make a bet that has multiple components to it in order to win the larger bet? Doesn't make any sense.
It was startlingly misogynistic.
So at this
not startling.
Yeah, not startling. unstartlingly, at this bar, there's fighting going on. Was like, I don't even understand their plan. Was their plan to scope out fighting? Are they like scouting?
They're just trying to find a tough scum fighter who's not afraid to, like, I don't know, be a dirty fighter or whatever. That's what I was guessing.
Like, looking back, I can't remember why they went in the bar in the first place.
I don't think they even say.
Did he hear that there was like no holds bar fighting happening there, and that's why he wanted to?
Yeah. He wants to put that on their network because that's going to be, the happening new thing. They're going to make a ton of money showing that, and so he takes them there to show them this property to say, yeah, this is what we're going to do next.
Do you guys know anything about the beginning of the UFC?
Nope.
Well, without really getting into it too much, the Gracie family was like this martial arts family, and they did a tournament. They just wanted to see if their martial art was the best. The most fun thing about it, though, is like the people who were involved early included Jim Brown, John Milius, who came up with the idea, was one of the major forces behind the idea for the Octagon. His original idea was to have sharks in water on the outside of the Octagon.
So if you get knocked off.
Theoretically. Nice.
That's awesome.
I think there was an electrified fence at one point also.
Yeah. Yeah. So it could have been a lot wilder than what it ended up being, which is just guys getting punched in the groin.
Where's John?
We should bring that back because I want to see the, like, you've heard of the show Shark Tank? Well, let me tell you. Sharks, do I have a proposal for you?
What if people don't get picked up on Shark Tank and they get dropped into a tank of sharks?
Yes.
It'd be like in The Simpsons where it's sharks and tigers. Do you remember the stuff?
So, speaking of...
Ordway and Unger were the two... They were a weird pairing of
the lackeys. Yeah. One of them had a
whole scene in the bathroom.
that's what I was going to say. Speaking of tanks, we got to talk about the bathroom. Did one of the lackeys give you guys a huge Andy Samberg vibe? He had like similar Ordway. Facial expressions.
Yeah. He was the guy that wasn't the, I feel like I've seen David Paymer in things.
Yeah. He's a really popular kind of smarmy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lackey guy.
Get Shorty.
He's one of my favorite actors. One of my favorite character actors. Yeah. He's solid.
But yeah, that whole scene in the bathroom was weird.
Well, when you have to bleed the old lizard, as he says, your options are...
Like, I really feel like it was all Vince McMahon sayings.
Yeah,
all things that only Vince McMahon said.
That's the thing. Like,
does he say that
other people would recognize.
I think that's it. I think this is Vince McMahon's his view of his customers. That's how he thinks they talk. That's where he thinks they go when they're not going to wrestling matches.
And the little person in the cage, in the bar, was definitely different too. That was like one of the things that we fixated on when we watched it the first time, was like this person in a cage that, I don't know, they didn't really talk about it all. They were just like, yep, they're just there. They don't do anything, but that's just what this bar is. And
I feel like that kind of just got by me and all the
amongst all the other weird stuff.
But
that was definitely strange.
I do have to say, I haven't been there in a long time, and I'm sure it's gotten better since then. But when I was in high school, I worked at a outdoor concert venue in town called Blossom. And their bathroom wasn't as disgusting. It wasn't a trough as much. So like in this movie, there's a trough that's up against the wall. It was a trough in the middle of the room. So you would be going, and if you looked up, you're making direct eye contact with the other person being across from you. It was
That middle trough of Blossom is ridiculous.
I would like to think that they've gotten rid of that. That's not a it's not great. There's
some gross bathroom.
Yeah, there's some gross. Yeah, there's some.
Have you ever been in the Highland Theater?
I don't think so. Not their bathroom. I mean, I've been in the theater. I don't remember their bathroom.
Is it a trough too?
I don't know if we should bleep this out or not.
It's fine. Nope.
Give them a hard time right now. Wow, their bathroom is hit.
Yeah. Come on, folks. Like, fix your bathroom up. What are you doing?
Annabelle's?
Oh, God. Annabelle's bathroom's not great.
Man, remember when we could go places and go to the bathroom in public?
What are some good bathrooms around town? I remember Crave having a very like fancy bathroom. Everything's like kind of shiny in there.
Well, there's a... Have you ever read the Devil Strips bathroom review, Urine Line?
No.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The Devil Strip, of which I am part owner.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You joined the club. Yeah.
You took a selfie in a
selfie in the Antonio's Pizza place by us. They just recently opened up, but they got a fancy bathroom with a fancy mirror and a fancy light. So I had to snap a selfie there.
We've gotten pizza from there, but I haven't actually been inside because we Lee and Andy brought it to us after the baby was born.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. It's really
I like the bathroom. Happy Dog.
Happy Dog. I've only been to the one in right outside UH.
So that's the one on the east side.
Yeah. I haven't been to the original one.
The original one has a really pretty like 1920s, like it has the little vestibule when you go in, like you go through the one door and there's just like an area where if you just wanted to like put your makeup on or something, and then you can go back to the actual bathroom, but it's all like emerald green and black tile.
That's fancy. That's fancier than
It's a fancy bar.
That's fancier than most things. That place is really cool. I like that place a lot. Mm-hmm. The one by the hospital at UH was open super late. So when I would have to work overnight, sometimes I would order food from there, order it on my way over there, walk, get it. And by the time I got back, like I would be busy. Yeah, it worked. It was great. Moving on. So based on this ballroom bar fighting, they come up with a thing called the Battle of the Tough Guys, and the winner of the Battle of the Tough Guys gets $100,000, which another thing I did genuinely enjoy about this movie was the Space Mutiny MST3K style names of many of these fighters.
Yeah, they were really awesome.
So I wrote them down. There weren't a lot. I wish there were more. Brock Chisler.
Yeah.
Bulldog McPherson, Klondike Kramer, and then in the second week there was Lugwrench Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rebar was one of the guys in
He was just carrying a giant rebar.
Yeah, he was just fighting with a giant piece of rebar. So cool. They did not stand a chance against Zeus.
Mm-hmm. So we're introduced to Zeus in not the best of ways. He picks a woman up by her face and throws her into a barrel.
Yeah. I think, yeah, he like sets her in there, which just, you know, a bar that has a empty barrel laying around.
He say sets her in there, like gently.
Yeah.
He places her in a barrel.
Doesn't he like drop her onto it?
Yeah, I don't remember her. I can't, for some reason, don't remember her like flying across the.
He kind of choke slams her by her face a little bit.
Yeah. It's bad.
So he ends up winning the battle of the tough guys. And is that the battle where he scalps his opponent?
Yep.
He just kind of pulls.
I totally forgot that part.
Is it?
Yep.
Is it a pure scalping or is it just a clump of hair?
I mean, it's a clump of hair because they couldn't pull like they couldn't do those special effects of like skin and blood. It's brutal.
Have you guys seen Contagion? I talked about it a few weeks ago when we did our outbreak episode.
Yeah.
So I have the DVD of Contagion, and mild spoilers, but it happens like right away. She's like patient zero. Gwyneth Paltrow dies on the cover. She dies, and then they do like an autopsy in which they like cut the top of her head off to look at her brain. On the cover of the DVD, it's a picture of her, and I'm pretty sure the picture is from the autopsy. I saw it today. I'm like, that's wild.
Wow.
Anyways, so Zeus wins, and it turns out that he has in the past killed a kid. Like during another fight, he kept pummeling him after the bell rang, and he went to jail for manslaughter, I guess, according to Rip's friend. This guy used to train him, and he seems pretty concerned that Zeus is out.
Yeah, Rip's trainer.
I guess. And then what happens after that? Oh, so Rip and Sam go on a trip for some reason. Couldn't tell you why they go on the trip. A place, they go to a diner, and the place gets held up by a couple guys. Rip manages to defeat them by throwing first a counter stool that he rips out of the ground and then pies at them. He throws a lot of pies at them.
He throws a lot of things in this movie.
Yeah, that whole food throwing thing I thought was just really weird.
When people break into a diner with guns, I don't know if my first... I mean, this movie's ridiculous, so it's not like it needs to be realistic or anything. But they're like really thrown off by having... cream-filled pie plates thrown at them. Later on in the movie, he throws weights around a lot. Like he throws bad guys. Like he's throwing a lot of things in this movie.
That's wrestling.
It is wrestling.
So here's what I take umbrage with: is he definitely caused more damage to the bar by destroying it than it would have cost them in the robbery money.
Yeah, right out of the register. What if they made like $400 by then max?
Yeah. Plus they're probably insured as opposed to like, I mean, maybe the insurance would have covered some of what he did, but still.
You have to be closed for how long to get those repairs.
Right. Out. I mean, that's going to cost you like business hours.
Who robs a like packed diner?
Well, it did remind me of the Pulp Fiction robber.
Yeah, I guess it did.
Maybe this was the inspiration. We know that Tarantino likes to pull things from other movies.
I wondered when I was watching it, I'm like, a daring daytime robbery in a diner.
That was one of the scenes that I actually remember from being a kid, because it was just that. Like, it was just such a huge mess. And I remember being like, confused, because it seemed like, you know, this is a place that Rip went a lot. He knew the woman who owned it. She was like excited to see him, and I was like, why is he breaking everything in her restaurant? Like, why is he doing this?
Yeah, that whole like past romance of Rick, the woman at the diner, was just weird too.
Does he ever apologize for like destroying her place either?
No.
Well, I think they just cut to another scene.
They cut to the hotel. I think.
Yeah.
So they're sharing a hotel room.
Accidentally.
With the quotes.
Oh man. One of my favorite quotes of the entire movie comes from this scene. Outside of the moment when she wakes up in the middle of the night and the bed is,
don't get ahead of it. Yeah, you got to do one thing before.
So
you can,
yeah. So they're sharing a room. Their solution is that they're going to sleep in the same bed, but put up a little cloth barrier.
Yeah.
And then they turn the lights off and go to sleep. And then,
yeah.
Oh, and Hulk in his orange undies.
Oh my God.
Let's hear it.
That weirded me out as a kid. Like, what is this?
It weirded me out as a middle-aged man.
Yeah,
sure. It was disturbing.
It's a Hogan move for sure.
Yeah, and I remember like my dad joking for years that he had those, and I just never saw them.
Weren't those like part of his original like wrestling? Like,
well, he wore like red trunks,
but they were, so I mean they weren't that short, but they were like,
they were like women's tap shorts, yeah, which is what he was wearing at first, yeah, and then revealed to be like bikini underwear, possibly.
Yeah, this is the first scene where the soundtrack was very obvious, and it kind of reminded me of that really cheesy Kung Fu soundtrack where it would be really intense, and then it would introduce this like flute, sort of like playful, like, and they're like, he's brushing his teeth on one side of the door and she's brushing her teeth on the other side of the door, and they're like flirting with each other and they're like going back and forth and like, no, should I do this? No, should I do that? No, I don't. Maybe just not interested in me. Maybe they're interested in you. And they're like, they're introducing this weird like soundtrack to go along with it that is way more playful than the rest of the movie is.
Yeah. It's a strange moment. Yeah. Again, a vision into Vince McMahon's view of sexuality and relationships. Mm-hmm. And stuff. Like, so bizarre.
Yeah, we have a scene with, I mean, any other movie, and the gaze of the movie would be on her.
Yeah.
And it is not. You barely notice the woman in her underwear in that scene.
Well, especially because what follows.
Well, yes. Yeah. So she wakes up and he's like doing push-ups on the bed, but the way that they
frame it, and
yeah, yeah, and I didn't frame it. It seems like he's doing something else. And then that happens, and then I don't know, they like wake up and the bed breaks or something. I don't remember what happens then, yeah. But the line that he says is, you've built bigger walls than I ever could. Was like one of the better,
yeah,
like lines that just you could tell that they, when they wrote that line, they're like, this is going to be special. Like, this is going to be on posters everywhere. Like,
he's sensitive, you know. Yeah. Rip is sensitive.
But there's a few lines throughout the movie that are just like, oh, you spend a lot of time on this line.
Yeah, I have that one written down too. Actually, it's you don't need this. You build walls bigger than I ever could.
Yeah.
Well. From the
Vince McMahon,
the writer. Yeah. Well, the writer Dennis Hacken also wrote Bronco Billy, 1980. He had an uncredited writing stint on Heartbreak Ridge. So it worked a lot with Clint Eastwood. That's all I got. Doesn't say anything good. Yeah, this guy hasn't done anything good.
Well, and I guess the rumor is that it was rewritten by Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan at the last minute, like before they filmed.
So bad.
Maybe the original script was like pretty good.
Hmm.
The film feels like, do you remember, well, I mean, Nick didn't watch it. Kyle might have been too young. In the 80s and early 90s, there used to be these little, like, they weren't promos because they weren't like in the ring with the wrestlers talking. And it wasn't even like the ones that they would do where they were like a talk show kind of thing where they would like sit off to the side and talk. They used to have these like little like vignettes, like music video length scenarios with the wrestlers. Like Sir talked about the one with the Ultimate Warrior and the Undertaker.
Jake the Snake, yeah.
Yeah.
He's teaching the Ultimate Warrior to harness the power of evil to beat the Undertaker.
Right. But he's takes
wearing his regular in, like, clothes.
A different place. They're not backstage at the. They are backstage, but they we don't we think they're someplace. You know, it's this movie feels like just like a series of those vignettes, all just like lined up, and we were
seeing
the movie out of them.
So the reason it turns out that Sam did not take her just perfect opportunity to score some Hulk Hogan action is that she's actually been hired by Brell to seduce him, but she's falling in love with him because he's such a nice guy.
Who wouldn't?
So she feels guilty about it.
He saved the diner with pies. So.
Yeah.
Well,
that's where he had me.
Yeah.
So Brell gets mad. He hits her. And then in an act of revenge, is he setting up the brother Randy in order to entice Rip into fighting Zeus? Is that kind of the idea?
He hasn't set up Randy to the fight on his own.
And he's captured, right?
Yeah, he's captured. Yeah,
like,
and isn't, I mean, Randy is like an orphan that he took in.
Yes.
Oh, it's not his literal brother.
No, he's an orphan.
Well, it's more brother and like
brother.
The vernaculars that white guys like that.
Brother. Use. Like, hey, brother.
Hey, brother.
Yeah, yeah. It's exactly like that. That's how they say it with a hard R.
With a hard R.
Speaking of Randy, did Randy look familiar to you guys?
Yes. I knew him from a million things.
He's mostly, I mostly knew him from Dexter.
Right? Dexter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mostly know him from...
He's been in a lot of decent stuff, though.
He's in Mulholland Drive, which is the first thing that I recognize him in. He's
also in Heavyweights.
Heavyweights?
Is he one of the... Oh, is he one of the counselors? I can't imagine. I can't imagine he's a big guy.
Is he?
I knew he's the dude in the Big Lebowski.
I was going to say, look at this...
Oh, yeah, no. The guy in the Big Lebowski with the bowling... Yeah, the bowling ball scene. He's not the counselor from here.
Look at this dude's filmography. He was in Mulholland Drive and Big Lebowski, like two of...
And have you ever heard him mention No Holds Barred?
Two of the most highly regarded movies of the last, like, 30 years. And yet, this is some of his best work.
Yeah, it's just him yelling, "Get him, Rip!"
Mark Pellegrino.
He's good. So I had in my notes, Zeus kills Randy. Because they sure made it seem like Zeus killed Randy. And then later in my notes, I have, oh, Randy's not dead.
Yeah.
So they lure Rip into... Like, how do they get him to go into this gym that's like the... What is it? Enter the Dragon? Is that the one with the room with all the mirrors?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Rip found out that his brother was badly injured, and then he went after...
I guess he's more like a ward, like Robin is.
Yeah.
So he's tracking him down.
This was a scene where they could have done something semi-meaningful, and they took the literal way out of it, and it was when he's breaking all these things and throwing all these objects around the room, and he sees Zeus like in a reflection of himself or whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, he sees like Zeus in himself.
They're gonna do a visual metaphor.
He breaks the mirror. And then it turns out that it's just a projector, and it's like he was like literally there, and it wasn't in his own head. And I was like, oh, yeah. Okay. They're like really just playing tricks on him. Not that this movie needed real deep metaphors or meanings in it, but that was a time when they could have done it, but they decided not to. They had a projector set up.
I feel like I don't want us to miss. Overlook the scene where Rip is like, is he playing like ball with a bunch of kids in a field, or he's like training, they're watching him like trained for wrestling, and then Zeus and Kurt Fuller show up in a helicopter to challenge him.
And he says, wow. And he says no, and he's like, I let all those kids down.
Yeah. That sits with them poorly.
Yeah. So then after that, Rip decides to fight him, which
we knew that was coming.
Yeah. And then Samantha gets kidnapped by Brell, I guess. And it's sort of a Butch in Pulp Fiction thing where he's got to go a certain length and then lose the fight.
Yeah, he's got to take a dive.
Yeah. He's got to last 10 minutes and then take a dive. So Rip's getting beat up the first 10 minutes of this fight. But around like 9 minutes, 50 seconds, you see him eyeing that clock. You know it's... You see those wheels turning. You know it's about to happen. So then after 10 minutes are up, he starts fighting back. And I guess Zeus dies. He like falls through. He throws him through like the floor or something like that.
He throws him through the ring. Yeah. A perfectly hot, like circled cut portion of the ring. Like he throws him into the ring and it's like, it was very...
you mean like it was intended for him to go
I mean, I have a lot of negatives with this movie, but one of the ones that stand out the most is the lack of over-the-top stunts, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mostly because when I think of wrestling and really ridiculous things, I think of like Mankind being thrown through the cage and on like a bunch of tacks, and like it's all one take and it's super impressive and really brutal and like all this stuff, and there wasn't any of that in this movie as far as like stunts. And like, aren't all wrestlers kind of like overweight stunt people? Like, can't they do that? I don't know, maybe with the movie it's harder, but I would have loved to see really amazing stunts, because this whole movie in a way felt like a really cheesy kung fu movie, just with bad choreography.
Yeah, without the
choreography. But that, I think that's one thing that this movie was missing, was like one of those like really badass moments. I know it came out in 89, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I contend that the best scene is the limo.
Yeah. But that was another thing where like that whole him jumping out of the limo happened in like three shots. Like it wasn't like,
oh yeah,
not that he could have literally jumped out of the limo himself, but like it, there could have been more things like that. Yeah
they could have done a lot more with kind of like what those guys are used to.
But
at the same time, I'm thinking it had a lot to do with, you don't want Hulk Hogan to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I got out of it, was even for a company that's known for soulless merchandising and just doing things only for profit, that movie felt like one of the most hollow things I've ever seen.
Why did we have an actor as his opponent? Why didn't we have any other wrestler?
Yeah, it literally looked like
we could have had a wrestling match.
Like, it looked like it was just there to pay off a gambling bet or something, or I don't know, fulfill a contract. Like, it just seems it seemed kind of half-assed.
Yeah, like actual wrestling provides like the things that Kyle's talking about, right? Like the stunts and the action and the violence. Yeah. And this didn't really have, save for the limo scene and I guess the diner scene. But the wrestling in this itself is like, I mean, granted, I don't like wrestling, so maybe it's great and I'm just missing the boat, but I found it pretty uninteresting and boring.
There's a lot of punching.
Yeah.
And screaming. I guess the guy who got scalped though was
a wrestler.
He I don't know if he was a professional one, but his credit was being a wrestler too. His IMDb credit is known as the Neanderthal, which there's a lot of that in this movie of just like commentator or screaming whatever guy or like nameless so-and-so.
So after Zeus dies, Rip goes after Brell, who electrocutes himself.
He has.
Oh yeah, he does die in the end.
He has a reaction to the fight, like a feel like a lot of people might have. I mean, not like suicidal, but like when people watch a wrestling match or some any fight and they get really into it. He just took it to another level where he was like throwing things around the room. He just happened to be in a room that was full of plugs and TVs. So he self-sabotaged himself. But it was kind of interesting to see that he was like portraying that stereotypical like audience member who gets way too into a fight just on the outside. Yeah, for some reason, when I was rewatching it, I was like, does Hulk Hogan really kill him? But he doesn't actually.
He does it himself. He's just around for it.
How many people does Hulk Hogan kill in this movie?
I did recently, just this past week, watch for the first time a movie in which I won't say how it happens, but somebody else electrocutes themselves or gets electrocuted, which is Taking a Fellow 1-2-3, which is an awesome movie.
The original? Yeah,
I'd never seen it before.
It's good.
The final shot of that movie is incredible. I love the crap out of it. Anyways, so that's pretty much, Brell dies and Zeus dies and Rip's living large, and that's it. That's No Holds Barred.
And Randy's okay?
Yeah, Randy's fine. Sam's fine. Everyone's good, except for the people who died. But fuck those guys. So how's that? Do you guys want to go around and say, like, would you recommend this? Or if so, with what caveats?
Okay.
All right, sir, you start.
No. No, I wouldn't. That's it. Yeah, just no.
What about you, Kyle?
I'd recommend it to people that enjoy making fun of movies and don't have to pay for it. Don't have to pay for this movie specifically. So if you have was it Hulu and Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
it's kind of a dumb, fun movie. I don't know if you need to be a fan of wrestling. It's not a good movie, but it's, if you're drunk, it's fun to make fun of.
Eva, what about you?
Not really, unless you feel like you're just a serious like 80s wrestling completist. You probably haven't seen it, and so I guess if that's the kind of thing that you want to be proud of yourself for, you should go see it. But other than that, like the things that you can find in No Holds Barred that might be good, you can get just watching old wrestling matches.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch this movie than Birdemic, though. Like people love, and that's why Birdemic was made, is because people love these really. I know No Holds Barred was maybe made with a little more serious
money,
and money, but
Birdemic was made totally in earnest.
I feel like you've said that before, but I don't really believe you.
It was.
It's hard to believe. I don't. It's not that I don't believe you. It's just like that movie. It seems like there's no way.
No, because that's even a movie where like for the room, in interviews, Tommy Wiseau will retroactively try to say like, oh yeah, we were making a dark comedy. It's supposed to be funny.
It's like
and apparently the guy who made Birdemic is still like, nope, this is my like environmentalism / Hitchcock homage.
But what about everyone else that was doing like the special effects and all that stuff? Like, you think, I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure he did his own special effects in his iMac or whatever.
Yeah.
Using the term special effects for that is
That's why, like.
That's stretching it.
Nah.
For me, I would say I am like almost on the side of Kyle. If you have
it's hard to recommend something that's free for some people.
Yeah, if it's the right group that you think you could have fun watching something that you know is like objectively bad, you could probably have a lot of fun with it. But watching it by yourself is probably challenging.
Oh, yeah.
So Kyle, is the you sent a picture that said RIP the jar. Is the jar broken or it had to get sacrificed or you just poured them out?
I used the jar to infuse the gin. So
how is that gin?
It's okay.
Do you do tonic?
I infused some gin with strawberry, cucumber, and lime the other night, and I used the jar from our movies to do that.
Did you just drink it straight?
Now, or? So I could. Yeah, drink it straight because it's pretty much just like a cocktail at this point. I put it in the freezer to chill it, and it froze, so it's got enough juice in it to actually freeze. But I can choose from the list of slips on the table if you only want to do that.
Yeah, maybe just flood, like shuffle them around a bit.
Yeah, we don't trust you.
Do you think they're not randomized right now?
Yeah.
I mean,
turn it down and we pick.
Not video, but.
I used a mason jar to grow my own scallions. I've been growing scallions during Quar, and I've gotten, they grow pretty fast. In a week, it grew like.
Well, you're really getting your 89 cents worth out of your scallions.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they're like, it's hard to get grocery, like not everything's in stock. You have to go to the grocery store or have somebody or like go pick it up. And it, like Acme, they do like a thing where they'll bring it out to your car, but it takes like days sometimes. So no, I've just got them. And scallions are also like, they give you so many scallions, you almost never go through all of them. So now I've just got like a handful that are sitting there growing on their own. It's great.
I love this shot of Kyle picking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that we're recording. Here, it's not a video podcast.
We're going to do this like those claw machine things. So I'll say, I'll say One Direction.
Okay. I won't be able to talk, but I can hear what you're saying.
You can use the claw.
Oh yeah. The raptor claw.
Use the raptor claw.
Go left a little.
And go kind of down and right a little.
And Eva?
Move away from the camera.
Okay. All right, I'm good. I'm good if you guys are good.
Yeah. Nice.
And we're saying no matter what it is, right? Like no matter where it's available.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what it is.
I think we should.
Oh,
do that.
Man. It might be one of mine. Looks like my handwriting is the Irishman.
Wow. Well, I think everybody's already seen that.
Yeah.
So we can do that one right away.
I want an excuse to watch it again, though. Let's be real. That movie.
I'll watch it
again. That movie rules.
I'll watch it again. I think I've got more to say about it now than I do.
Yeah, I'll watch it again because I want to take notes, too. Yeah, oh, great movie. I don't think Themo's seen it.
What a ofer at the Oscars.
Don't get me started, man.
Man.
Although,
well,
Marty Scorsese did get a shout out from this guy who's on my shirt. I'm wearing a Bong Joon-ho shirt.
So I guess the next one would be, maybe we should do a trope.
Yeah. We'll do
it. We usually do a couple episodes, right?
Yeah, we usually do like a month's worth of episodes, but this is a whole new world. We'll figure it out, but we'll do it. We'll do at least a trope next week so people have some time. It's a 3.5-hour movie. People need time to catch up with it. Although,
we doing the random trope button?
We can do the random trope button. You want to pick next week's now? Or should we do this off air?
I did the random trope button and it sucks.
We'll do it off air. We'll figure it out. Alrighty. Any final parting shots on No Holds Barred for anybody?
No.
Alrighty. Well, as
nothing else.
Yeah.
People, the only thing I had else was Mr. Brill says it's party time.
Yeah.
That was another weird thing. But anyway.
People know where to find us. You can rate and subscribe. You can get some loot over at, what is it, onthetropes.redbubble.com. You can support us at patreon.com/onthetropes and find us at Facebook and Twitter and Insta. As always, I'm your host, Nick. And what?
We're all on Letterboxd too now.
Oh yeah. Have you been doing that a lot? I followed you, but I haven't.
Yeah.
But I've okay. Stuff. I haven't seen too much, but I'll keep an eye out. Anyways, I'm Nick.
I'm Sir.
Eva. And Kyle.
And join us again next week when we'll still be stuck in our houses.
On the tropes.